Yep. You know, when you hear that music, you know it's Thursday night. You know it's 11 o'clock. You know it's kayak fishing radio time. What do you say, Mark?
Hola.
All right.
West Coasters.
Yeah, man. Can't forget about the West Coasters. A lot of kayak fishing going on out west. But
that's why we do the late night show, man.
That's right, man. All right, man. This is the Kayak Fishing Radio Network's late show. I am your host, Rob DeVos, otherwise known as A Bad Backcast. You can keep up with all of my doings and other skullduggery via my blog, which is abadbackcast.com. Or you can keep up with us, me and my soon-to-be co-host here, Mark Wheeler, otherwise known as Landing Crew, at yakangler.com. So, you know, check us out, man. But anyway, got some stuff going on this week I'd like to talk about, and you might want to call it the wet blanket episode of Kayak Fishing Radio. Working on some, want to talk about some safety issues and some things like that on this week's show, because we had a recent tragedy in our area here around in Tampa. Let me just go to my over here to my report real quick. And Dateline, Ruskin, Florida. That's over by Tampa, before you ask. The coast, here it is. This happened on, this is Saturday, Sunday. The Coast Guard did its search for a missing kayaker Sunday afternoon when officials found his body near E.G. Simmons Park in Ruskin. A body matching the description was found by a Good Samaritan at 4:30 p.m. Sunday night. He was reported missing Saturday afternoon around 4:30 p.m. when his friend was found on a kayak tied to a buoy south of Gadsden Point in Tampa about 2:50 p.m. He reported that he had been unable to continue back to MacDill Air Force Base, where they had departed, and that his friend had gone to find help but had not returned. Coast Guard immediately launched a search using several vessels through the air and water. Well, there it goes, man. Just want to go through.
Left.
Yeah, the friend left. I guess they got out. It was pretty rough. Me and Ms. Backcast were out of Whedon Island on Saturday, and it was pretty windy, man. And you know, Whedon Island is a protected area, but it's right next to right on the edge of Tampa Bay there. And it was, you know, we were up in the lookout tower there, and you could see wave caps in the bay. So it was pretty rough on Saturday. So yeah, apparently they left. It got rough. The guy, I don't know, one of them had couldn't go on, and the other guy went for help. So I would say rule number one, don't leave your buddy. Would you agree?
Never.
No, I wouldn't.
In survival training, whoever's had any survival training, or you watch Bear Grylls, they'll talk about this. If you're with someone or you're lost, the safest thing and the best thing to do is to stay put. You know, because we have, you know, when they try to find you, or they, you know, they do a rescue, they know of a generalized idea of where you're at. And that's where they start. And they slowly progress out. And if you have two people, the worst thing you can do is separate, because you never know what might happen. It's easier to take care of a situation when there's two instead of one.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. You know, if something ever happened, you know, like you know, I fish with one of my fishing buddies that, you know, we go fishing all the time, and I mean, if something happened, I would never, you know, I would never leave out there, or and I hope he wouldn't either. You know,
Never.
My other, a couple of other safety rules that I go by is always have a float plan, you know. My thing is I get a hold of somebody, you know, somebody, talk to them, you know, in person, you know, talk to them on the phone, whatever. I don't leave an email. I don't leave a note for somebody or something like that. Usually I'll call my mom and I'll say, hey, you know, I'm going fishing here. You know, let's say I'm going to San Diego or Dunedin Causeway or something like that. And, you know, I say, hey, man, you know, here's where I'm going. I don't deviate from that either. And if I do, I'll call her up and say, hey, you know, I change of plans. I'm going here instead. And, you know, I should be back at a, you know, whatever time. And, you know, if I'm not back, you know, sometimes I'll forget to call her when I get home and, you know, I'm home taking a nap after fishing or something and she'll call me up, you know, well, did you make it home or what? And I was like, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, definitely.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to do that. Let somebody know where you're going. And
well, there's actually,
yeah,
I
got to
find the website, but there's a float plan creator on the web. I'm trying to find it right now. But, basically, what happens is it's a program that you use, and you put in, you know, where you're going to be, secondary ideas, you know, where you might be, if you have a radio, a cell phone, and it goes all on this piece of paper or on in this program, and you print them out. I give one to my wife. I leave one in my truck window. So this way, if anything would ever happen, they're going to find my truck first and foremost at the ramp. They can look at the window and read everything and where I might be. And they go from there. And that's a major thing. If one person, say you're in trouble, last thing you want is one person. They're trying to figure out who might know where you're at. So if you have more than one way of them starting the search as quickly as possible, it alleviates something even worse happening to you. You know what I mean?
Now, yeah, absolutely. Another thing, you know, is always wear a PFD, personal flotation device. It's really, you know, it's a good thing. You know, I'm bad about it. You know, I always have one with me, but I don't always wear it. You know, and I got to get better about that. You know, and I've seen you preaching about it. Yep. And I know, and that's a bad thing. It's a bad example when, you know, people see pictures. You know, they see pictures on my blog or on Yak Angler or something, and I don't have my PFD on, and I'm on the water. You know, and I know that that's bad, and I got to get better about that. And I promise I'm working on it.
I need to stress this to everyone. There is a trip that we're planning on, you know, that we're doing in February to Jacksonville with a lot of people. And I've already told several people, if I see anyone getting on the water without a PFD, I'm not getting on the water with them. I don't want to be responsible for what might happen.
Sure.
You know, because I don't want to be sitting there and finding out, you know, 30, 40 feet away, because it's going to take at least 5 seconds to get to them and get them out of the water. You don't want, you know, it takes, what is it, a tablespoon of water to make you drown?
Well, apparently,
come on, people, where are the PFD?
Apparently, the victim was wearing a PFD, but it was hypothermia that got him. So,
yeah, and that's the other thing. Dress for the conditions. It's called the 130 rule. If anyone doesn't know this, basically, you take the water temperature and you take the ambient air temperature. Okay, you add them together. If they don't reach 130. Dress like it's going to be a winter day. Dress for survival. Dress with, you know, non-cotton but polyester, you know, or moisture-wicking clothes that won't hold the moisture.
Yeah.
You know, wear waders. You know, all those major things to make sure that you don't die of hypothermia. I dunked in very, 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 very cold water. It was 40-some-odd degree water, and it was 34 degrees out that day. when I was thrown out of my kayak. And I'd never been so cold, and I was in hypothermia. Really bad. And it was lucky enough that it happened in a wave next to the shoreline where he get, you know, remove all the clothes. I was butt naked, ID card in hand, trying to, and I'm being dead serious, in front of people's houses.
I know.
Getting
I know.
The wet clothing off. That's what you have to do. Because I didn't take the proper precautions. And I'll never do that again. It was a close call.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, And I can tell you right now, you know, I've fallen through the ice before, ice fishing, and luckily I didn't go.
Man.
Yeah, it is, man. I didn't go in, you know, over my head or anything like that, but I only went down about waist deep, but that was enough. I'm telling you, man. I couldn't imagine having my whole body immersed in, you know, water like that.
Yeah,
but it doesn't have to be freezing to kill you, you know. I mean, our water temperature was like 50, I think it was 53 degrees over the weekend in the bay, and that's enough.
What was
your if you're in it long enough, huh?
What was your air temperature?
It was mid 50s.
Okay,
but,
so you know the 130 rule. You will go into hypothermia within 5 minutes if the water and air temperature are below 130. So, given, you know,
yeah, absolutely.
Shadow of a doubt. Let's look at it. 55 degree water temperature with, let's say, or even give them 60 degree air temp. That's only 110, 115.
Yeah.
Still 15 off.
So
it
another thing.
Very much to kill you.
No, it doesn't. Not at all. So another thing too is, you know, keep your, you know, I keep a cell phone in my dry box with me, right in front of me. You know, and if my kayak goes over and I, you know, my dry box goes over, you know, I can still retrieve that. It, you know, it's tied to my kayak. And, you know, I got the Coast Guard on speed dial, you know. So that's, you know, I mean, I can't understand. And once again, I don't have all the details to this tragedy over the weekend. But I don't understand, you know, why one of those guys didn't have a cell phone with him. And or you know why they didn't use it or what happened, you know, exactly there, you know, but you definitely got to have something like that with you.
Oh, without a doubt. I'm even, you know, they make the spot. I mean, the spot's no bigger than, you know, your wallet in your back pocket. You know, to be able to hook down your PFD, you know, VHF radio. You can buy one of them for less than $80. Little cheap one, keep it dialed on channel 16, which is always open to the Coast Guard, which is your emergency channel, you know.
Yep.
There's something there that can, you know, if anything would ever happen. And I always plan for the worst, hope for the best. That's how I think of everything. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be doing a lot more fishing, you know, farther out from shore this year. I'm buying a VHF. I'm even thinking about buying the spot, just in case, because you never, never know.
Oh yeah, I know. And you know, another thing too, you know, don't be stupid about it. You know, if you think that the conditions are bad and you're going to have a hard time with it, or you think it might, you know, get bad. You know, just be careful with it, you know,
just don't go.
Don't go. Exactly. I mean, you know, there's, you know, I had one time last year in the springtime when, you know, the conditions were terrible and I was on a week's worth of vacation and, you know, I wanted to go fishing, you know, every day and I couldn't because there was 30 mile an hour winds, you know. Well, you know, finally I got sick of sitting around the house and I said, well, I'm going anyway. And, it came real close to sinking the kayak, you know, out off of Sand Key, you know. So definitely not, it's not a hard thing to do. So, you know, definitely,
no.
You know, be safe. You know, we all want you to come back safe. You know, we don't want you to, you know, as hardcore as you think that you might be, you know, getting out in the nasty stuff is not a good idea, man.
You know, and if anyone knows Kayak Kevin, this is a guy that is one of the best all around kayakers, not fishermen, but kayakers out there. And if you watch his new video, when he did his Chesapeake Bay tour, he was getting sunk. And the only thing that you know, he wouldn't have not made it to the other side of the bay if he didn't have a radio to call for a boat nearby to come help him. And this is a guy that, you know, is going to end up paddling 600 miles. I think he's got a 1,000-plus mile one already.
Wow.
You know, and he knew halfway through it that, you know, things were getting bad.
Yeah, you know, and if that guy has trouble... If that guy has trouble, you know, any of you know
and
anybody else would too, you know, because so, he knows what he's doing.
And he said, you know, the hair on the back of my neck started to lift up. And I just knew it was a bad deal. Y'all, if you are just starting off or you have any doubt, I do it all the time. I'll get down the boat ramp and I'll look and I'm like, man, I just don't like the conditions. And I've been doing this for a while. When I go, you know what? I just don't like this, the way the situation is. Even if it's a great day, but I look at the boat ramp and I'm seeing guys that came and launched their boats, or and I'm being dead serious, or they come back in, tie up their boat, dump a pail of beer bottles in the trash can, and then come walking back with another cooler in the boat and shove off. I don't go out.
Nice.
I don't go out.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Boats are heavy, and they have propellers, which are sharp. Uh-uh. I'm in a little plastic Tupperware. I'm not getting run over.
Well,
that
if it's
happened to me a couple times.
It's just a common sense thing. You just gotta, you know, take by, you know, you gotta play it by ear. You gotta, you know, just you gotta, you know, just use common sense. You know, if it looks bad, don't go. So in Florida, we have this thing where the, you know, in the summertime especially, the thunderstorms creep up on you, you know, and you can be out and you can be, you know, a mile and a half away from your put in and, you know, over the horizon, here comes the storm real quick, you know, this bad thunderstorm, the sky black and, you know, thunder and lightning. And luckily I haven't been caught in any of those, you know, cause Florida thunderstorms, they're pretty quick, you know, they're over within 30 minutes, but, that's, you know, it's a pretty hellacious 30 minutes that you're going to spend out, especially out in the water. So, you know, that's not a way that you want to go with it, man. Because
I've been caught in a couple of storms that I called my wife and be like, honey, this is where I'm at. If I don't call you in 30 minutes, send help.
Yeah. Yeah. One fishing trip last summer up off of Dunedin. You know, we were, you know, it came up from, you know, behind us. I didn't see it, you know, and all of a sudden I hear a, you know, a thunder boom, and I look back, and sure enough, you know, and that was the direction that we had to paddle back to the put in, you know. And,
isn't it?
Yeah, we had to go right into the storm, you know, to get back to the put in, of course. And so I'm like, and I can see, you know, Clearwater Memorial Causeway, you know, in the distance, and I can't even see it because it's like shrouded with rain, and I'm thinking, man, you know, that's the direction we got to go. So we were like paddling like madmen, you know, and we just got back and got the kayaks loaded on the car, and it really hit, man. I'm not kidding you. That thing filled my kayak up with water, and my kayak weighed about 300 pounds by the time I got home.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, yeah, definitely don't mess around with safety. You know, it's a once in a lifetime thing, man. You just got to make sure that you, you know, you stay safe. You do so, you know, I prepare for it, man. I know that one day I'm going to be faced with disaster, you know, and it's not something that I look for, but as much as I go fishing, you know, if something's going to happen, something bad's going to happen someday. So, you know, I just try to be prepared for it and hope for the best, expect the worst, you know. You know, I don't go out and I'm not scared to death. I'm not like, oh, you know, ho-ho, boo-hoo, you know, and I'm scared. But I do go out and, you know, and I'm prepared for it, you know, at least prepared for, you know, most things that could happen out there. So, you know, now if I was out there in these cold temperatures, my buddy went in the water, what would you suggest that you do? Would you try to get your buddy back on his kayak, or would you try to get him on your kayak, or, you know, how do you keep from getting flipped over?
The biggest thing is judge the situation. If your buddy's in the water, he's wearing his PFD, he's head up, he's conscious, he's talking to you, and he's not freaking out. That's the big thing. If he's, you know, hey, I'm in the water, I can't grab my kayak. Cool. You paddle over, grab the kayak, you know, one hand paddle it over to him, or hold it in a spot where you can get to it. You know, it's the biggest thing. But if your buddy's sitting there and he's freaking out, and he starts paddling over to you, I'm paddling away. Because I don't want to flip.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get flipped either, you know. That's what I'm saying, you know.
And that's what it comes down to, is realizing the situation. If I can, you know, help him out, hey, you know, my kayak's over there, I'm cool, that's great, man. Go ahead and grab the back of my kayak. You know, I have got the handheld back there, handhold. You know, let me paddle you over there. I'll help you out. You know, I've done that a couple times with guys that, you know, had to release big red drum and trying to hold the lip of a 50-plus pound red drum, trying to revive them. That becomes difficult. People jump in the water and actually swim and pull the fish with them as I hold on their kayak. And then I'll paddle over and they'll take a breather before they have to get in their kayak. Hold on to mine. You know, that's the nice thing about having a kayak. You can jump in and out really easily.
Now, do you know any websites to go to where you might see some videos about, like, deep water reentry into your kayak or anything like that?
Well, if you buy most kayaking books that are out there, you know, kayak bass fishing or any of the books, they're going to have reentry how-tos. Jim Sammons did a great video on the wader myth. What happens if your waders fill up with water? And he does a great video, and you actually see some how to reenter. He doesn't explain it step by step, but he does it very, very well. But the biggest thing in my eyes is every time it gets warm enough that I don't get in the kayak and I'm shivering, you know, like summertime, I go ahead, or even if you can find a pool and you're just starting off, or if you're a little rusty, go ahead and dump the kayak. You know, go ahead and dump yourself, flip it over. And, you know, wear your PFD, of course, and have a buddy there or two, and practice reentries. I do them once or twice a year just to make sure I am up to par in my skills. You know, and to learn to relax and
yeah,
how to do
something
it.
It's something that you have to practice, and you have to kind of have a sort of a game plan for. You know, you can't just fall over and expect to, you know, try to get back in. You know, I've seen different you know, styles of that, where, you know, one of them is to reach over to the other side and pull yourself up, or, you know, the other one is to try to get yourself on the same side. I like to reach over myself, you know, and pull myself up.
I reach over, and I got a ride, which is 33, 34 inches wide, maybe more than that. And what I actually do is I look like Shamu, some of the dude, you know, at SeaWorld. I'm being serious. I'll shimmy my butt up, and I'll just wiggle my way by grabbing the other side and pulling myself, kicking. And here's the key. You got to kick your feet to help propel you on the kayak. Granted, it's funny when you watch me do it, because I go around in a circle. I'm pushing the kayak. But I'm getting my way up there until I can get my hip on the gunwale of my kayak, which is the side of the kayak, for those that don't know. So this way I can halfway slide my butt in the middle of the kayak, and I just lay there because I'm usually spent and can't breathe. Because it can be a difficult thing to do it, you know, and especially if it's cold, I mean, it's, you know, you're in hypothermic shock possibly, and or you're panicking because there might be sharks in the water, or
it's
definitely one of those things.
That's usually what gets me back in my kayak really fast is the fear of sharks in the water.
For me, it's not the sharks. It's the seaweed that gets me. You know, when you're floating in the water and you're all alone and it's really quiet and you're just kind of floating there, and then that little piece of seaweed brushes against your foot, how you seem to walk on water magically. That's usually what gets me.
Yeah. That's funny. So make sure that you're safe. If you don't have a game plan out on the water, make sure you get one. You know, it's a great thing to do, man. And every once in a while, get out there in your kayak and practice some deep water reentries. You know, with your PFD on, of course. So moving on. Let's get on another subject. I mean, I'm not like, you know, I just gotta. Got to be the wet blanket here for a little while, but let's get on to something else. Okay, now today I was writing on my blog about the discontinuation of one of my favorite lures, which is a Storm wild-eyed shad. Not the swim-tail shad, but it's just it's called a Storm wild-eyed shad. Now,
I think it's a jerk shad style.
I'm not sure exactly. It's like a twitch bait. You know, you might call it a jerk bait, but it doesn't have a paddle tail, and it had the pectoral fins on sticking out the sides, and just a regular fork tail on it. Now, you know, that was a great bait, man. You just rig it with a weedless, you know, an offset worm hook, weedless. That thing was great, and it would just kind of just hang there a little bit, and you give it a twitch and a flutter and that thing, man, fish would get keyed in on that thing, and that thing was a great bait. So last year I was over at Bass Pro, and they were on you got to either go to Orlando or Fort Myers to go to Bass Pro. You know, they don't have one in the greater Tampa Bay area for some reason, which is really strange. But anyway, I was at Bass Pro, and they had them on clearance for, you know, $1 a bag. And I'm not kidding. I bought like 5 bags of them, you know. But the problem is I go through a lot of them because I use them a lot. And, you know, that's probably my second favorite soft plastic next to a DOA shrimp. And anyway, this thing, you know, they're only good for a couple of fish. They get hammered, you know, and they get ripped up and there's nothing, you know. I mean, I'll play around with it as much as I can, you know. I might be able to get 3 fish out of it. Who knows, you know, before I have to re-rig the thing. But, man, that thing, they get trashed really, really quickly.
You know what I'm holding in my hand right now?
Yeah, I saw your picture on Yak Angler today, and that's right on the money. So
yep.
If you can figure out a way to make those you know,
well,
I'll be your best buddy.
Here's the thing with these baits is they have a small glass rattle inside them, which was their major key thing. Now, reproducing this, something, the shape is not hard to reproduce.
Okay.
Glass rattle, it.
Well, I mean, I don't.
Where it's positioned in the body.
Oh, I got Redfish Chuck on. Hey, what's up, Chuck?
What's going on, guys?
How are you?
What's going on?
Good.
Just talking soft plastics.
That's my special.
But hey, Mark, you know that thing? Can you figure out how to make one of those? I mean, I don't know. I don't think I don't know if the rattle had anything to do with it or not. I don't know. But
I can definitely reproduce them.
Yeah, those are some. Just the not only the style of the bait, you know, the way that they work, man. Those things were awesome, and I just, you know, I was like really disappointed that they're, you know, I don't get me wrong, I really like Storm products, but I really was kind of disappointed that I couldn't find those anymore because they were so, I don't, and who knows why they discontinued them. Chuck,
yeah,
you ever, you know what I'm, You know what I'm talking about? They were the, like, almost like a fluke-style bait, the Storm made. It was a wild-eyed shad, but it didn't have it. It wasn't pre-weighted, and it didn't have a paddle tail or anything like that on it. It was just like a fluke tail. You know, it had a fork tail on it and side pectoral fins that stuck out.
Yep, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, what happened with those? Any idea?
They just weren't big sellers for the company, so they continued it. That's usually what happens.
You got to be kidding me, man. Those things were awesome.
Yeah,
I know how they are. You know, seriously, those things were awesome. I'd use them on bass. You could use them in saltwater, everything, man. It was like almost like a perfect imitation of a 4-inch finger mullet or something, you know. And the idea that you could fish it without weight and it would be, you know, just kind of float and flutter, you know, in a finesse style, it was flipping awesome.
Yeah, there used to be a monofilament that I think it was Berkeley had out a while ago, Berkeley and Berkeley. And I love that monofilament. I mean, that was my stuff, my go-to stuff. Extremely abrasion resistant and tied great knots and everything. And I used to pick it up at Walmart and discontinued that. I couldn't believe it because everybody I knew fished this stuff. But they just sometimes these companies just get a wild hair, and that's what happens.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It seems to me like it would be cheaper to make one of those as opposed to something else. You know, like the swim tails, you know, the pre-weighted stuff. That seems like that would, I don't know. I'm no no business dude, but it would seem to me like that would be a lot cheaper to make something without a weight, you know, and pre-rigged and everything than pre-weighted. I don't know. But I'm trying to get Mark to maybe make some of those up. That was, dude.
Oh, I'd have to change a little bit of the design.
I'd be
so that way I'm not
those up.
Killing copyrights. 10% is all I need to do, and I already did the 10% on this one, so I might have a handful for you when you got in Jacksonville.
Yeah, those are awesome. It had a hook pocket, you know, so you could rig the thing up weedless, and man.
Yep, right on the top, right above the pectoral fins.
Yep.
Yeah, oh yeah. I like I said, man, I have one right in my hand right now, out of the bag.
Yeah, dude, that if it's the same thing that you put up on Yak Angler today, that was the one. Same exact thing.
Yep.
And you can see a picture of it on the blog, one of the chewed ones. I threw it up there. That was like the last remaining one. And I'll tell you, the last time out, that thing, I had a tarpon come across a flat about 50 yards to check it out. And, the thing was like 10 feet away from my kayak. I was freaking out because I'm like thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to get towed around here. This is going to be great. But no doubt.
For many people that don't know, soft plastics are easy to do with what you want. A little tip for anyone out there. Let's say you're using a bait and it gets split in half. You can go ahead and use super glue to mold it back together, bring the two pieces together. I prefer, because super glue sends off a scent, to use a lighter. And you melt the two ends, you stick them back together, and you wait until they dry or they cool.
All the time, bass fishing, man. You'd take and you'd cut off like a 7-inch culprit, plastic worm, and just I'd attach that to the back of a crankbait. You know, put a worm hook on the back end of a crankbait, and you got a weedless crankbait. You know, I mean, stuff like that. I used to do the lighter.
I got crankbaits with that are crawfish imitations and rattle traps that have claws on them. And they're my go-to. Those are great bass baits, especially the rattle trap style. And what you do is you let the bait fall. It's got to be weighted so it falls. And as it's falling, it kind of flutters. Once it hits the bottom, you just rip it. a good 8 to 10 inches, you know, a little like a hook set almost. And then you let it fall. Once it hits bottom, wait a second, and rip it again. It is a deadly, deadly bass technique that you use. I use it around rock. When I see rocks, I'll pull that out and I'll throw that along with flipping jigs and soft plastics in craw imitations. If you're around rock and you're not throwing a crawfish imitation, you're doing something wrong.
Hey, Chuck, let me get your opinion on this now, because did you hear the beginning of the show at all before you called in?
Bits and pieces of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, do you have any anything to say about the about safety that you can think of that we might have missed?
No, you guys pretty well covered it. Over here on our coast, I don't really worry too much about getting dumped out of the kayak and not being able to get back in. I mean, if I fall out, I needed to stand up because I'm in really, really skinny water. But for the most part, there's times I paddle, you know, clear across the intercoastal, and at times I'm in 8 or 10, maybe 12 foot of water. If I go off the beaches here, you know, 20, 30 foot of water, or like in the springtime, I plan on going out pretty far out in the big boat and dropping the kayak out and doing some fishing. But I think the fact that a lot of guys don't wear their PFDs, that's kind of an issue. And to be perfectly honest with you, it wouldn't hurt my feelings to see them make a law where you're required to wear it at all times in a kayak. That's just kind of my take on it, you know? I mean...
Oh, no problem, man. I understand, you know, I'm trying to get better about it. You know, that's one of my goals for this year is to not have any pictures taken of me while I'm on the water without my PFD, you know.
For those that fish in warm, or not warm, but really, really hot weather during the summertime, I understand it gets hot.
You get sweaty. You just want to take it off. There's a way to get around that. Go out and buy one of those Mustang auto-inflatable PFDs. They're small, so you don't get hot. You know, it's a small amount of mass on your body that you need to worry about.
You wear it like a belt or something, or it's just a little strap?
It looks like a pair of suspenders. Like you're wearing suspenders.
Yeah.
It's about a 4-inch piece on either side of your chest, and there's a neck roll.
Okay.
You got to get the auto-inflatable ones, just in case might get knocked out and fall out.
I've got my wife bought me for Christmas. She bought me the fanny pack kind of style auto inflatable PFD, which is pretty cool. I'm not big into getting stuff around my shoulders. You know, I just don't like to feel kind of tied in or anything like that. And this thing is nice. It's small, it's compact. It's kind of out of the way. You know, it's always on me. It doesn't impede me from paddling. It doesn't impede me from standing up or doing any of the things I do. But, you know, it's peace of mind. It's peace of mind knowing that if I do go in the water and bang my head on the way in or something like that, at least if I do drown, at least they'll find me, you know?
Yeah. That's a, you know, what's a price tag on something like that? On it? Just off the top of your head. I mean, I'm not positive myself. I haven't really looked at it.
I think I lost you there for a second, but
yeah, you've got a lot of feedback behind you.
Oh, okay. Hold on 1 second. Sorry.
Okay. Now for this technical moment, everyone should go to yakangler.com. Why? Because you should. If many people don't know, Yak Angler is the ultimate kayak fishing resource. And, you know, the knowledge base that is there, if you're just starting off, is one of the websites, or personally, the only website you should go to. We have everything from, you know, regional reports to, you know, a water cooler where you can sit there and talk about the game, even recipes. So get on there. Show your support.
Okay.
And become part of the Yak Angler Nation.
Check 1, 2. Is this better?
There we go.
All right. Much better. I'm kind of like I was not looking wearing my headphones, so I was just going with the speakers. So you know, the thing is, I can't hear myself. You know, and I can't hear myself with the headphones on either. So, but yeah, man, I definitely like that on Yak Angler in the forum there with the recipes on there, man. You guys, you know, if I hung out with you guys on a regular basis, I'd be like 300 pounds, man, with all the stuff that you guys are putting up there this week.
No, just wait.
Well,
dude,
we hang out on Yak Angler and Yak Social and everything else.
Yeah, but I mean in person, man. Holy moly! What'd you say, Chuck? What are you pulling out now?
I said, yeah, just wait, man, because I haven't even begun to put any recipes up there. You guys are gonna love the stuff I'm gonna put up. It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man.
The cool thing about my job, man, is I work in the world's largest and busiest port, which is Port Canaveral, and as far as for cruise ships and commercial ships and cargo ships and that kind of thing. And a very large majority of my customer base is commercial fishermen. The nice thing about that is when these guys get back in, every now and again, they happen to drive by my shop and stop and give me, you know, a square of yellowfin tuna or, you know, a fillet or a big chunk off of a swordfish or filefish or grouper or snapper or whatever the catch was for that particular day or that week's trip, you know. So I do get to experiment quite a bit with fresh fish, and, yeah, I've got some crazy recipes I'm going to be throwing up there on Yak Angler here shortly.
That's awesome. I mean, some of the stuff that you guys are putting on, I'm like, you know, wow. And I started putting up one today, and I just got, like, really busy at work, but shrimp and mango quesadillas, and that one.
Oh, yeah.
That's a there's a restaurant around here. It's called Casatina's in downtown Dunedin, and it's they call it healthy Tex-Mex or healthy Mexican food, and it kind of does always kind of have a healthy flair. It's all homemade stuff, and it's great. I mean, it's really good stuff, and that's where I found that, and I was like, man, you know, and I just made it up one day, you know, hey, I can make that, you know. There's not too many restaurants that I go to where I say, you know, I can't make this better at home. You know, very few times do I ever go out anywhere. And I think there's like, you know, an Indian restaurant that's around that's like the best Indian food in the world. And I'm like, sorry, can't make this at home. But, you know.
Yeah, it's funny because I talked to Mark on Yak Angler about putting a recipe forum, if you will, up there, and he was kind of against it. And I think I utilized every smiley face that I could to show my dissatisfaction with his decision. And I think he's quickly changed his mind with the responses that we've gotten from it. So,
yeah, I know. I thought that was really funny.
I could say this. I had no help in that whatsoever.
I think that you're posting up more stuff on, you know, recipes than Chuck is. I mean, you know, not that it's a contest or anything, but I thought that was, you know, you just, Mark, you took off with it, man. I was like, wow, where's all this stuff coming from?
Well, I used to be a chef before I was before I joined the Marine Corps.
Wow.
And, you know, it's one of those things where I've always got recipes running through my head, and it's the way it's always going to be for me because I was a chef before anything else. I was working in restaurants when I was 10. So, you know, it's one of those things where I love cooking, hence why I'm a large dude. But,
Amen, brother. I feel your pain.
Yeah, it's and to be able to put a recipe up that I do, you know, with my eyes closed is a bigger challenge for me than, you know, cooking it many times. Because now I got to think, oh, how much do I really put in there? Oh, crud.
I have the same problem, man. When I you know, put recipes up on the blog or wherever, I'll I have a term for, I'm like, okay, you know, sorry to, I don't know how to write a damn recipe, so I do recipe, redneck recipe writing, you know, is what the way I usually call it. I think I have a category on my blog called redneck recipe writing, but, you know, when I find a good one, or, you know, when I have a good one, and it's usually fish-based most of the time, I'll throw it on there, like my smoked fish.
Yeah.
And my you know, the Asian coconut curry fish, stuff like that, you know, it's you know, and neck recipe writing.
You know, and I like to do weird and wild a lot, and that's why I put the fish ribs on there. If y'all don't know about fish ribs, there's something wrong. Y'all need to try these. Any fishmonger would know what this is. It's that bony piece behind a fish's gills that looks like a rib almost. It rolls around the body. And you take that and you smell it, and you can even do it with barbecue sauce, which is the Jim Beam barbecue sauce and the honey smokehouse is, my God.
Sounds good. I've done that with cobia. I used to run another bait shop, and one of the guys that worked with me was a sushi chef, and prior to him working at a bait shop, and I don't know how he went from one extreme to the other, but anyhow, he was the first person to show me that, actually, how to cut that part of the fish out, the throat, if you will, and he's like, dude, I'm telling you, you can have the fillets. This right here this is the answer. I'm looking at it,
yeah,
and it doesn't really look that appetizing to me because it still has, like, pectoral fins kind of attached to it and gill and this, that, and the other. And he's like, no, watch me clean this out. And he cleans it all out and everything. He's like, take this home, smear it down with some barbecue sauce, throw it on the grill just for, you know, a few minutes and pull it off, and I promise you, you will never throw away this part of the fish ever again. And since then, I haven't.
That's awesome.
I learned it in Baja, Mexico, because we catch what we call grouper, they call pargo. And watching, you know, the Mexican guy, you know, captains and mates, the mates would, you know, play the fish for the customers. So I was working with them. And then they, like, hide the rest of it. I'm trying to figure out what they're doing, so I talked to one of them. And he showed me, he took the rib out, and then he took the cheek out. And the cheek is the most tender and it's meaty piece of a bigger fish. Drum have it, but it's a small little medallion. It is absolutely, y'all, if you could, I've actually wrapped it in bacon and cooked it like a filet mignon. It is out of this world. Absolutely out of this world. And everyone throws it away, and it's, it kills me.
Well, so do you have to have a bigger fish to get that, or, you know, can you get
no,
it on
No, you just got to have a highly predatorial fish. Reds have them. They're just really small. Your bigger stripers have a really nice chunk of them. Groupers, tile, cobia have a nice, it's a look like a hot dog almost, cheek. What other ones?
That you catch up there.
Big red snapper have it too, and so do cuberas.
Yeah, snapper definitely. You know, top anything that has a lot of a really strong bite to it usually will have a big cheekbone. Sheep's head, you know, all your oyster and shell cracking type of fish, tog, have a nice big meaty piece of cheek on them. And I try to get as much of that out as possible. It's so good. Gosh.
Hey, by the way, there was speaking of cubera snappers, I can't think of his name on Facebook. Really good Salty Shores photography guy. I can't think of his name offhand.
Sam Root,
yep, that's him. Did you see that picture that he had on there? Somebody recently caught a 98-pound cubera snapper.
Well, hey, you want to hear a really funny story from down in D's neck of the woods. When I was in high school, I played on the football team, and one of my buddies who played alongside me, his name was Matt Salmon, and Matt would always skip football practice when his dad was going fishing down there at the inlet. And it was just kind of a known thing. The coaches didn't get pissed or whatever because he tended to bring back some fish for the coaches. But anyhow, he goes down there one day and he's drifting through the inlet fishing for snook. And he's dropping pinfish down at the bottom on a fish finder rig and hooks up to something he couldn't budge. And then all of a sudden this thing he couldn't budge decided he wanted to swim out to the ocean. 45 minutes later, up pops a 68-pound Kubera snapper that he caught on, I think it was 20-pound test.
Oh my God!
It's still an IGFA world record for the line class, and it will probably never be broken.
Wow!
That inside Sebastian Inlet in 12 foot of water.
No kidding, man. That's a big fish on 20-pound test. Holy moly!
Yeah. He's got a wreck that's just north of my port here. It's about 30 miles to the north, in about 65 feet of water. And all year round, there's kuberas there that push 100 pounds, and they're there all year long. But you just can't get the damn thing to eat anything. You know, I mean, we drop big pinfish down, we drop live vermilion snappers down, we've dropped name it spade fish. We've dropped them down to the bottom, seeing if they eat those. And the only thing that those big guys will eat most of the time is a live lobster. And
wow.
That's what they use for bait for them down in the Keys. If you ever go down on a charter down there and try and target kuberas, the best way to do it, the guys will go out and they'll bully net a couple of lobsters the night before or the night of your trip on the flats, and then you drop a whole live lobster down on the bottom, and those kuberas just cannot stand them. Or you go down there and shoot them in the head with a spear.
Yeah.
Well, that seems like an easy way of doing it.
Not a big offer. Well,
did you guys see the videos that I posted on Yak Angler?
Yeah, that was some cool stuff there, man.
I know it probably bothers a few people to see fish just get basically annihilated like that, but everything that was killed was well within the bag limit and the size limits of the trip. And that's my buddy Josh, who works with me out at Hammett Fish and Supply, and his buddy GP and his brother and a couple other guys. But those guys do all that stuff free diving.
And oh, wow.
Josh doesn't use a tank, and Josh can go down to that wreck I was telling you about over to the north of us in 60 foot. He can go down and sit on top of that wreck and watch those fish swim around.
Yeah, you know, some of these free divers are sick. You know, I've seen these guys on, like on Shark Week or something, there was a guy that could hold his breath for like 12 minutes or something like that. You know, he just had like this, really low blood pressure and he had some sort of freak anomaly in there that he could, you know, definitely, he had the ability to do that. And he would go down there and free dive and swim with these tiger sharks, you know. But that's nuts, man. You know, but the thing is, you know, the thing about spearfishing that, you know, it doesn't bother me is that, you know, okay, you're going to go down there and you're going to do that. You're like on the same turf as the shark, man, you know?
Oh yeah. I know if, Offshore Adventures, that TV show, Chris Fisher, he's one of the, every Costa Del Mar commercial, you'll see him and his wife, Melissa, and Captain Brett. I know all of them from San Diego, and they're some free diving, especially Captain Brett McBride. This dude dropped down to 80 foot to the bottom to get a pargo out of the rocks and was fighting this fish, pulling this fish out after he speared it. And got the fish. I mean, some of these free divers, you know, I used to do it too with them, but I'd only go down about 15, 20 feet because I'm not crazy. And, you know, they're down 40, 50, 60 feet, and it's just like, dude.
I'm not a big offshore guy. You know, offshore is like a totally different, you know, with all the high-tech stuff, and you know, so to me, it's not as much fishing as, you know, like say inshore or anything like that. You know, it's a totally different ball game, you know. But me personally, my biggest offshore fish was a 43-pound amberjack from 200 feet of water. And let me, on spinning gear, I had, 40-pound test braid, and on a big old pen, 6,500. And that was what, I pulled that thing up out of 200 feet. And I was done with that. When I finally got him in, I was done. I was like, okay, It's time to take a nap.
they don't call reef donkeys for nothing.
Oh, man, those things, and especially on spinning gear, man, on heavy spinning gear, that was no, I was done after that, man. But
speed jigging form.
What's that?
Vertical jigging, the speed jigging, butterfly jigs.
Yeah.
I do that a lot out here. And, man, you're sitting there and you're cranking that thing from, up here it's like 150 to 200 feet, from the bottom. You're reeling as fast as you can. You're jerking the rod, and you're 10 feet from the surface. All of a sudden, boom, there's an amberjack, or usually it's tuna, slamming his jig, and they're screaming line. Your arms are already beat from, basically having a seizure, with your hands. It is exhausting, but the most exhilarating, way of offshore fishing for me out there, without a doubt.
Vertical jigging is pretty awesome.
Do you have places out up there, Mark, where you can, go for offshore fish, from your kayak without having to take a mothership out?
You can. It all depends. We were catching kit sailfish this year in 30 feet of water. And these are only like less than 4 foot sailfish. Still very young. It was just a blast for us. But usually we'd have to mothership out, which out up here, the weather and the weight and the, because we've got the Outer Banks, we have Speak Bay, we have the Northern Currents, and we have the Gulf Stream. And they all seem to converge right off the Virginia Beach shoreline. So you get a wind shift, and you're in really bad situation. So a lot of us will mothership.
Yeah.
Every so often we do get, some mahi within a mile, 2 miles ashore. But that's very, very once in a blue moon.
That's cool. I know, one place that I'd really like to fish one day is that where the Gulf Stream is within, I forget, like maybe a mile of shore right off of Miami there, or is it Fort Lauderdale or West Palm Beach or something. Anyway, you can see the skyline in the background, and there's these people holding up, 100-pound groupers and snappers and whatever, I think that's really cool.
The only problem that you have with getting that close to the Gulf Stream down there is you really have to plan your trip accordingly, because it's not like you just paddle out there and you start fishing and boom, you're on fish, and then you just paddle back into your spot and, and beach your kayak. I mean, you really got to put some planning involved, because Gulf Stream hauls ass. And, it doesn't take maybe 30 minutes and you're 2 miles up the ocean, literally like that fast. It could be that quick. I mean, I've been in the Gulf Stream before where the stream itself is running 10 knots.
Wow.
I mean, 10 knots doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're sitting still and you're moving at 10 knots, it's pretty fast in a kayak, And
okay.
I'll tell you, like, the benefit of being down south, and not even down to Miami, I mean, if you even just go down to Fort Pierce, there is some phenomenal fishing down there, even closer than Fort Pierce. Just south of Sebastian, just south of Dee's area there, if you launch off the beach there, there's some shallow water reefs that are, I mean, you're talking 20, 30 foot of water that's absolutely loaded with life, and you can catch mutton snappers and mangrove snappers and groupers and hogfish and just, a ton of different species of fish. Get your kingfish just outside the reef, and just past that it drops down. You can get into some dolphin certain times of the year, some sailfish and a lot of cobia and that kind of thing. So, the Miami thing's cool to be near the Gulf Stream and all, but the benefit of not having to drive that far south to do one of those types of trips, You know, that would be a good trip for you to go over there, meet up with Dee, fish with Dee in the river, and then the next day maybe go and jump off the beach just south of the inlet.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I always wanted to try stuff like that, even though I'm not that big of an offshore guy. But, you know, that's one reason I like fishing in the Keys is because, you know, you could be fishing on one side, you know, the Gulf side or the, you know, and then, you know, you could be catching bonefish on the Atlantic side and, you know, switch over to the Gulf side and go catch a grouper in the afternoon or something, you know. It's pretty cool. So, that's an awesome thing. I didn't know, I didn't know that you could do that over there off of Fort Pierce.
Oh, yeah, for sure. In fact, Josh, the guy in the video again, my buddy Josh there, he during lobster season, he doesn't go down to the Keys to go lobstering. He just goes down to Fort Pierce. And sometimes he doesn't even bring a boat. Sometimes he doesn't even bring a boat down there. Sometimes he just walks off the beach with his dive gear. Not his dive gear, but his mask, snorkel, and fins, because, again, he's a free diver. And he'll go down there, literally swim off the beach, swim out to the ref, come out to the reef, swim down, get his limit of bugs, and come back in.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we used to do that in San Diego. Because in San Diego, it goes from shoreline, wave breakers, 50 feet.
It's about the same thing down there.
And it's just, you want to talk about fun, man. You're swimming out and the breakers are 20 feet behind you. And you dive down and it's a, you know, plethora of life, kelp beds and rocky, you know, outcroppings. And you get down there and there's, you know, hundreds of lobsters, spiny lobsters down there. And, that looks like the biggest one. You grab them, get to the surface, measure them. Oh, he's too small. Dive back down. That's a big one. Up back you go.
I've never done lobster season down in the Keys or anywhere else, but I've heard it's a pretty fun time if you can get, you know, a room or anything like that down in the Keys, because it's like, you know, that's crazy. Everybody and their mother goes down there for that.
You know what's funny? The lobsters down in the Keys tend to be so much smaller than the ones up here.
Really?
You know, they don't have time to get big because they constantly get picked.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I didn't know that they were that far north. You know.
Oh yeah, I know guys that get lobsters all the way up almost to Jacksonville.
No
kidding. Sure, there's lobsters on past that, but I mean, who wants to dive in that cold water all the time? You know.
Hey, you learn something.
I know my buddy GP this year. I don't know what the final weight was on the lobster, but my buddy GP this year got a lobster that was bigger than his dive tank.
Wow.
So you dive, or know anyone that dives, look at the dive tank, and he got a lobster, not antennas, from the front of his nose to his tail was bigger than the dive tank.
No kidding.
That's about a 15-pound...
bigger than that. That's close to 20.
Absolute pig, and he got it in 30 feet of water off of Fort Pierce.
No kidding. Oh, my God. I think I'd be scared of that thing. No.
Well, he said that he went down, and he looked underneath the ledge, and he saw these two huge antennas sticking out, and when he shined his light down underneath the ledge, you can kind of see him just sitting there. So he went back up to the boat. He has a little picker gaff that he uses to, you know, move fish around in his fish box. He dove back in, went back down the ledge, found him again, and stuck the gaff through his tail and brought him up.
Wow.
He didn't want to put his hands on him because, I mean, they'll cut your fingers open, man, with them teeth. Well, not the teeth, but their jaws.
Yeah, I know. Wow.
Here's a funny story for you. My first time going down in San Diego and free diving for lobster, we launch off the shoreline, and we get out there, and I dive down, and about 35 feet of water. There was a tall little outcropping that made it about 20. And I got down to there, and I'm looking around. I found a lobster, and I grabbed him. And I had my measuring tool on me. So I have it in my hand in front of me, tail facing me. And I, you know, checked to make sure he's of length, and he wasn't. And I did the stupid thing of letting him go. That son of a gun shot right back into my crotch. I'm about 10 feet from the surface. Y'all, I was panicking. Took all the breath out of me. I couldn't move. Because when they move, you know, a little pound and a half lobster, it hurts. You know,
oh, yeah.
Pure mass smashing me in, you know, and a pair of board shorts right in the, you know, beans and franks, it'll take the breath away from
like
you. And I, you know, have my buddies laughing at me for about a year after that.
I don't blame him. I would, too.
I tell you what, man. I really hope that one of these days that the Yak Angler slash Kayak Fishing Radio road trip show, whatever you want to call it, can make its way down here to me and Dee's territory, because you guys would just be absolutely blown away by the fishery that we have here. It's so stupid.
I was lobbying hard for that when they were putting that, you know, when we were talking about doing, you know, the trip initially. And I wanted to go over there, man, and fish with you guys, because I was like, man, you know, I've never been over there, you know, kayak fishing or anything like that. So I was all geeked up to get over there. And, you know, Sebastian, I know that they got the, you know, state park right there, right at the inlet and everything. And, you know, but we couldn't find enough, we couldn't find enough campsites, or I don't know exactly what happened. I don't know who picked Little Talbot, you know, and I'm not.
Shifted.
What's that?
So I think the interest just kind of shifted. Guys just really didn't want to drive that far south. And you know what, man, I understand. Next time you guys get an opportunity to do a road trip, or even you, man, I'll come over there and pick you up one time, bring you over here. You can crash at our place, and we'll go do some fishing or something like that for a day or two. But the thing that I love about my area is, especially the Mosquito Lagoon, is the Mosquito Lagoon has absolutely zero development on it for the entire south end of the lagoon. So there's no houses, there's no runoff, there's nothing.
That's what
there's
I love.
Nothing between you. There's nothing between you and the beach, or you and the ocean, but the dunes. And so on a day where the wind's coming off the ocean and you're fishing the east side and you're nice, well-protected, you know, it's nice and calm, flat, it's glassy, you can hear the ocean just on the other side of the dunes. And
that's
it's like
awesome.
The most, it's like the most serene kind of just crazy feeling that you'll ever have, because you're sitting here looking across acres, miles of just flat, you know, lagoon, but you hear that ocean roaring behind you. It's just, it's so cool, man. And the fishery, the fish that we have here, the fishery that we have here is just, it's incredible. Like I said on the earlier show, Monday, I literally didn't cast for over an hour. I just sat there and watched over 100 redfish and black drum swim within 5 feet of me in crystal clear water in a foot and a half, just cruising around doing their thing, feeding, hanging out. Just, it's incredible. You know?
You were just watching them, or?
No, I was just sitting there watching them. I'm standing up in the kayak. I'm standing up, right? I got my paddle down into the sand a little bit, and I'm resting my arm on the paddle. If you can picture, like, hanging out of, like, on the corner of a street somewhere, like hanging out by the street sign, that's probably what I look like watching these fish just swim all around me. Swim
wow.
underneath me, swim out in front of me, swim in behind me. And they weren't spooked. They weren't freaked out because they had no clue I was there. I wasn't moving. I didn't make any noise. So there's no reason for them to be alarmed, you know.
Yeah.
If you move, if you make a movement, if you move your arm or anything, if you itch your scalp or, you know, adjust your sunglasses, they're gone. If you stand perfectly still, they'll just sit right there and look at you.
Wow.
You know? And the cool thing, too, about the Mosquito Lagoon is that in the south end of the lagoon, this is a little-known fact, in the very south end of the Mosquito Lagoon, there's a hole that's about 15 foot deep, and there is no other 15 foot of water anywhere in the south end of the lagoon but this one small little spot, and it is home to 15 to 30-pound gag groupers.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I've heard of that, like the inshore, grouper, usually around the Everglades and stuff, you know. I've never heard of them in the lagoon. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, the difference between the Mosquito Lagoon and the Indian River and the Banana River is the salinity level in the Mosquito Lagoon is much higher because it actually does have somewhat of a tide flow. South End Lagoon really doesn't see that much of a tide effect because it's so far removed from Ponce Inlet. But once you move about 25 miles or so up the lagoon, then you hit like this area or a town called Oak Hill. You start to get into more marsh, more oyster beds, more kind of like backwater, tall grass kind of thing, almost like what you start to see up towards Jacksonville. And that's all, that's pure salt water that's flushed every day through Ponce Inlet. So those groupers just make their way in from all the way down to the south end of the lagoon, and they found themselves a home in this deep hole. And the hole's covered by timber. There's old dead mangrove trees that have fell in the water. And I've watched guys hand line, because it's about the only way you can do it, hand line 30-pound groupers out of that hole with using like 100-pound monofilament and a yo-yo. So, I mean, it's pretty impressive, man. You know, I mean, those fish are down deep, and they're up underneath all this cover. And you can drop a pinfish bigger than your hand down to the bottom, and it just gets annihilated. And then two seconds later, you're in a foot and a half of water catching redfish, black drum, and sea trout. So it's kind of a neat place for sure.
Yeah, I've run into some there's a place called Bay Pines around here. It's a little inlet, you know, right around Boca Ciega Bay. And the Bay Pines area, it's totally oyster beds, man. You could go for like 150 yards in any direction, and it's oysters. Okay. Now, you know, when the tide's out, you know, that's less than a foot deep on these oyster beds. So, you know, I've had to wade into that, you know, and it's no fun on your shoes for sure. But I've gotten out there, and there's some, like, you know, 10-foot holes out in the middle of that, you know. And there's just some huge trout sitting in those things in the wintertime, man. That's like one of my favorite places to go in the wintertime. If I'm going to fish, I'm going there, man, because, and, you know, it'll be about the size of a swimming pool, and it's just, you know, 10 feet deep out in the middle of this less than a foot of water, you know. And it's great. You just throw anything down there. You let it hit, you know, just drift down or, you know, whatever. You can jig them up, too. And, you know, I mean, and there's probably, I mean, every time I've ever been there, I've pulled, you know, really nice 20 to 25 inch trout out of there, you know, which is big for West Coast. And, I mean, you can pull those things out, man, and that's the place to go, man, in the wintertime, because they just stack up in there.
Yeah, those are nice trout, man, 20 to 25 inches. We're not all as fortunate as Dee to have the trout down pat to where she can go out and just, you know, put the hominous whoop, you know what, on them. So, I've caught my first year at big trout. I mean, you know what, man, I don't mean to preach about her every time that I talk about trout fishing or whatever, but Jesus, that woman is, like, incredible.
Yeah. You know, and the funny thing is, I get, like, my idea of a big trout is kind of skewed now, you know, because, you know, all summer long we're pulling, you know, 18, 20, 25-inch trout out from under docks, you know, and dock lights around here, like, every night, you know. And I see hers, and she's got these 25, 30-inch trout, you know, and I'm thinking, man, you know. I think I had a pretty big trout last night, and I'm seeing Dee out there with this giant monster, you know. So,
yeah, makes my little 12-inch trout seem like bait.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's true, you know. But I'll tell you what, man, I have had the opportunity to fish with her on a couple of occasions, and she's a riot, you know, she really is. And we were talking earlier about fishing shows, this, that, and the other, and she's like, because I'm not on any fishing shows, I don't watch them. she needs to have a fishing show, for real.
Oh, absolutely.
She is just an absolute ball to listen to talk on the water. You should ask Mark and Adam what she was saying when she saw those big redfish that I put them on in the Mosquito Lagoon. Yeah. Granted, those fish weren't eating. But, dude, we had redfish tailing right off the bows of our boats. That their tails were bigger than dinner plates, just monsters.
They were
like upper 40 and 50-inch fish.
Wow. Yeah, they were telling me about that when they were when they got back from there, and I was like, man. I was kind of...
Yeah, and she was freaking out. She's cussing up a storm, and just, it was funny, man. It was funny to see her get crazy with it. You know, she's like, holy jeez, you know, with that accent that she's got. It was good times, man. It was good fun. But, I definitely need to get down there and do some fishing with her, too, because I need to learn the ways of the Jedi Master when it comes to catching big trout, apparently.
Well, that's definitely in the plans for me this summer, is to come over there. Now, you know, you were telling me about, you know, fishing there's like islands out there and stuff. And do you know if those are run by the state or the county or what? I mean, I'm kind of, or is it just a mom and pop?
No, it's not mom and pops. I think some of them are done by the county and some of them are state run.
Okay.
I'll look into it more for you and I'll get you more information on it. The one thing about the Mosquito Lagoon that I can warn you about right away, like I told you before, is it's not called the Mosquito Lagoon for nothing. All right.
Yeah.
Like there's areas of this country that have mosquito problems, and then there's areas of this country that are just, it's just straight messed up how many mosquitoes are around.
Yeah.
And the Mosquito Lagoon first thing in the morning is basically the closest thing that you can come to for hell on earth. I mean, the second you get out of your vehicle, literally, the second you get out of your vehicle, you are absolutely covered in mosquitoes, big, nasty swamp mosquitoes. And by the time you launch your kayak, you've done already been eaten up. You've lost probably a quarter of your blood, and they follow you all the way out into the middle of the lagoon. And then I guess
wow.
they finally decide, okay, well, this is too much work, and then they leave you alone. And if the mosquitoes don't get you, then the no-see-ums get you. That's mainly in the summertime. Right now, the mosquito problem is non-existent because it's so cold. But, yeah, this is definitely a time of year to go camp on those islands. And I'll tell you something, man. That would be, to me, that would be the ultimate camping trip because literally you will have no noise from any kind of no man-made noise, put you that way, because you're so far removed from civilization that it's not even funny. It's like basically like being in the middle of the Everglades, because I mean you got nothing around you, you know.
Yeah.
And all you hear is that ocean at night, and
that's
dark
awesome.
Out there. There's no street lights and stuff, so yeah, it'd be really cool.
That's totally up my alley, man. That's exactly what I'm looking for as far as the as far as that goes. I'm definitely, you know, look, we camp in the summertime. We don't care. You know, people freak out about, oh, it's so hot. Oh, I only camp in the springtime or in the fall. Well, dude, I camp like 12 months a year. I don't care. So that's definitely on the agenda this summer, is to go do that and, you know, then shoot down south and go fishing with Dee for a day. You know, maybe stay at Sebastian or something like that. So, you know, got to plan the summer because Miss Backcast is you know, out of school. You know, she works for the school system, so she's out from, I think, June 9th all the way. I don't know if she's doing summer school this year or what. But, you know, we're planning on it, man, and that's what we'll do. And, you know, I'll tell you, I know what you mean about mosquitoes because I've camped down in Big Cypress before, man, and I know what that's all about. You know, where you step out of the car and you're, like, covered in mosquitoes, been there before.
Yeah, kind of crazy.
All right, man, well, let's pack it in. I gotta hit the hay here soon and dream about kayak fishing. So, Redfish Chuck from Mosquito Lagoon, thanks for coming on, man. Thanks for calling.
I appreciate you guys having me.
Sure thing. And Landing Crew, man, Mark Wheeler from Virginia, thanks for coming on, man.
As always, man.
All right. Well, I'll see you guys on yakangler.com, and y'all have a good night, man.
You too.
Good night, y'all.
All right.
Good night.
All right. So that brings us to the end of another edition of Kayak Fishing Radio. I am your host, Rob DeVore, otherwise known as a Bad Backcast. And check in with yakangler.com or check out my blog at abadbackcast.com or shoot me an email at rob@abadbackcast.com. But that's it for this week's edition of Kayak Fishing Radio, and we'll see you next week.